Episode 7, Parenthood and Mentorship. Another spiritual conversation with the Keeper of Knowledge took place on a large elevation, next to which a majestic wide river flowed. Although this place was not far from the city, there was no one around for 100 meters except for a small group of disciples gathered around the figure of the sage. Occasionally, the outlines of small fishing boats could be seen in the distance, sailing along the current. The sun disk illuminated the sky, and the clouds drifting across it sparkled with orange and pink flashes, as if speaking to everyone about the impending heat of the summer day giving way to a pleasant evening coolness. The air was filled with the scents of meadow flowers, and the distant sound of water splashing and the chirping of insects could be heard. The group of students was relatively small, but everyone present was fully committed to their spiritual quest. The proximity of the teacher inspired and motivated them to move forward, to engage, and to continuously progress. They all understood that right now they had the opportunity to ask the sage all the questions they were curious about, reflect on the answers received, and delve even deeper on the path of discovering the truth. Today, the subject of the conversation was a complex, multidimensional topic that touched upon the questions of the embodiment of the immortal soul on earth, conscious birth and upbringing of children, as well as mentoring and assisting others on the spiritual path. Teacher, I have a question. It may sound strange, but it's the realities of our time, began the fair-haired woman with blue eyes, her voice slightly faltering. She looked at the sage with doubt, as if unsure if she could even ask such a question. Nowadays, in vitro fertilization is widely practiced. She quickly lowered and raised her eyes again, trying to gauge the keeper's reaction. His face remained remarkably calm and friendly, and mischievous sparks gleamed in the depths of his gaze. Encouraged, the disciple continued more confidently, I have the impression that it is even more popular than natural conception. But how should we view such a method according to God's laws? What kind of souls incarnate in these children, and is IVF acceptable? The mischievous sparks in the sage's eyes ignited with renewed power. Irina, soon children will be born entirely from test tubes, and the old method will soon become obsolete, he replied in a half-serious tone, astonishing the disciples with how effortlessly he discussed such complex and controversial matters. And he began to explain, why should a woman suffer, endure torment, and then have to endure a long illness afterwards? It makes a woman feel bad. That's why it's safer to grow children in test tubes. The keeper's words were met with an excited mumble from the disciples, who did not expect such an answer. But teacher, what about the soul? Irina asked in confusion, expressing sincere bewilderment. Because this method of conception, it's unnatural. Won't it lead to attracting some dark soul? The soul enters the body at the moment of birth, the sage gently explained. Before that, there is only the fetus, the physical embodiment carrying only the parent's genes, but it doesn't yet have a soul. So, does that mean abortions aren't considered killing? Irina guessed, unable to hide her vivid emotional reaction. Exactly, the sage confirmed unequivocally. A woman should approach the birth of a child consciously, and if she understands that it's not the right time, it's better to have an abortion. At that moment, a girl with fiery red hair and endearing freckles on her cheeks raised her hand. Can parents somehow influence what kind of soul their child will have? Perhaps. Can they somehow choose the timing to attract a light soul? She asked, staring expectantly at the sage from beneath her long red lashes. It is possible, Angelina, the Keeper of Knowledge smiled. For example, in ancient times, priests would choose the right astrological aspects for conception and birth. And now, parents simply need to pray and dwell in an elevated state to attract a light and pure soul. Satisfied with the sage's answer, the young woman nodded, while a woman in her 40s with attentive gray eyes raised her hand. Teacher, does it mean that in the modern world, very few people actually think about the soul of a future child? She asked with hints of regret and sadness. If you think about it, usually people engage in sexual activities under the influence of alcohol, often after scandals and fights. and it is at that moment that children are conceived. Doesn't this also have a negative impact? Yes, Tatiana, you are right, the keeper nodded. For many people, all of this happens in a drunken and ugly state, surrounded by demons and other evil entities. Just think about weddings. There is so much envy, negativity, and malevolent entities gathering around people that only bad souls are attracted. No one prays, no one tunes in to anything sublime. How can a good soul be attracted then? The sage paused and cast a gaze into the distance, where the full-flowing river merged with the painted sunset sky. Observing his gaze, the disciples froze in contemplation, reflecting on the master's words. Therefore, in order to attract something good into our lives, we must be in a state of prayer, with an open heart, the sage continued. And if a wedding is accompanied by drunkenness, if someone conceives a child after scandals, fights, and disputes, what can result from that? What good can be attracted after all of that? That's why we live so badly. When the teacher finished speaking, Tatiana raised her hand again. With respectful trepidation, she looked at him, gathering her thoughts for a new question. Dear Keeper, another popular trend now is surrogate motherhood, she began. Many celebrities don't want to ruin their figures. They want to avoid all the negative consequences of pregnancy, so they simply take their own egg, combine it with their husband's, and implant it in another woman. Does that make it better? The sage met the disciple's gaze, and she noticed the sparks of mischievous amusement in his eyes once again. It's a reasonable solution, to spare oneself from suffering at least, he replied with a smile. Really? Tatiana asked, raising her eyebrows in a gesture of surprise. She clearly did not expect such an answer, and the teacher, seeing her reaction, laughed kindly. Of course, he said with irony, making it evident that he was exaggerating the situation, urging the disciples to see its absurdity and laugh at it. Let someone suffer, let someone get sick later, but I will have a check mark. The child is already here. Isn't that right? The sage glanced at the disciples. Many women give birth to a child just for the sake of a check mark, simply because it's what you're supposed to do. But who needs it? No one thinks, here comes a soul into the world. What can I give to this soul? Just feed and clothe it. That's how we feed and clothe domestic animals. So perhaps it would indeed be better for many people to have dogs and cats instead of children. The young man with expressive dark long hair tied in a ponytail half questioned. The statement sounded quite bold and assertive, and noticing this, the sage smiled with a gentle, translucent sadness. Yes, Matvey, in many cases. That would be better, he replied softly, with astonishing calmness in his voice. Then parents wouldn't be able to harm their child's soul. They would focus on taking care of a pet, expressing emotions towards it that they would want to show. Then there would be less harm. But here we have a human being, and nobody asks themselves, what will I give to their soul? Can I impart wisdom and elevated emotions? Can I teach the soul to walk towards God, make it religious and spiritual? What if there's nothing to give? If a person is still in an unawakened state? Matvey asked again. In that case, a person wouldn't even contemplate these questions, the sage explained. And if they start awakening and pondering, then they may come to the understanding. If I have nothing to give, why should I bring someone into this world now? I need to become someone, possess something noble and luminous first. And then, when there is something to pass on, only then can I have a child. And at that point, it doesn't matter how it happens, through IVF or otherwise. You know, many people think like this. We grew up in such conditions, constant parental fights, scandals, fights, negativity. Well, and nothing happened to us. And our child will grow up just fine. We'll just check the box, create an illusion that everything is normal with us, that we're like everyone else. Tatiana expressed her accumulated thoughts and emotions and turned her gaze back to the teacher, awaiting his comment. All of this happens out of ignorance, which is why we live so badly. He stated the fact with a barely perceptible translucent sadness, acknowledging the existing state of affairs that couldn't be changed overnight. If everyone truly saw what was happening, they would be appalled. And then they wouldn't procreate. They would reject these ideas of checking boxes in their diary. They would think, I will have a child to pass something luminous to their soul, to welcome that soul into a spiritual environment, not into conflicts, not into constant scandals. If people seriously contemplated this, the majority wouldn't procreate at all. They would think, what will we give the child? We can't give anything. We have constant drinking, scandals, fights, and negative emotions. We'll only poison the new person, make them morally crippled. Why do we need all of this? We'll destroy another soul this way. The teacher finished speaking, and a silence settled around him, interrupted only by the gentle splashing of water from the nearby river. From the expressions on the students' faces, it was evident that they were trying to ponder the new portion of information, to process it within themselves. Finally, a bright brunette raised her hand. She had been attentively listening to the questions of others and the sage's responses, but she hadn't asked any questions herself until now. Dear Keeper, she said, what should one do if they already have children? Until what age should they continue to raise the child, and when is it appropriate to let go? It was evident that the teacher's answer to this question was of great importance to her, as it was connected to something personal, a situation that was troubling her in the present moment. Victoria, you should release the child right from early childhood, the sage replied, sending beams of acceptance and support to the woman. Osho, for example, described his own childhood like this. I am grateful to my grandparents for not pressuring me, for not trying to make something out of me. I could freely run, play, swim in the river as much as I wanted, and wander in the forest. And it was through this that a sense of freedom emerged in me, and I started feeling like an individual. But when I was 7 years old, I was taken away from my grandparents, and that's when everyone started piling up on me, pressuring me, imposing their beliefs and programs, immersing me in illusions. They tried to do this at home and at school, but by then, the spirit of freedom had already been nurtured within me. So I actively resisted all attempts to impose masks on me, make me play roles, and make me fall asleep, and it helped me. So does that mean children should be released right from early childhood? Victoria asked, surprised. Yes, nodded the master. Usually, parents don't release their children. Instead, they think, we need to do something with them, raise them, instill rules in them, constantly swaddle them, scold them, prohibit this and that. But what good comes out of it? They take away a person's freedom, the opportunity for independent development. But how can we release them so early? After all, the child is still young. They don't understand anything on their own. Victoria attempted to object as delicately as possible. Nature is much wiser than humans, the sage replied with a radiant smile. If the child were allowed to develop on their own, it would be much better. Even in early childhood, a child feels, now it's time to run. Now I feel like sleeping. Now I want to eat. And now, on the contrary, I don't want to eat. Their body is still intact, so it naturally knows what to do and how. It is the parents who should learn from the child how things should naturally unfold and not impose societal programs on them. But parents think, it is my duty to swaddle the child, instill certain rules in them, make them obedient so they don't have their own opinion, punish them, put them in a corner, deprive them of any freedom. They fail to realize that in doing so, they only cripple the person. But does that mean parents should have no influence on the child at all? Irina clarified. What if it is positive influence? Of course, one should strive to surround the child with a spiritual atmosphere, the sage answered, so that something light is constantly happening around them. Engage in spiritual practices in the child's presence, so they see how it's done. After all, they imitate everything they see. But if all they see are scandals, tantrums, and drunkenness, what will they imitate? The Keeper of Knowledge paused and looked attentively at Irina, then shifted his gaze to the other students, seeking their reaction to his words. They listened to the sage, holding their breath, trying to grasp the essence at a deeper level. One should lead by example and demonstrate to the child spiritual and elevated expressions, the teacher continued. Surround them with sublime impressions, so they listen to divine chants, watch spiritual movies, and read intelligent books. Then they will grow spiritually. But what kind of impressions do they usually encounter? The sage posed the question to the students, this time expecting their response. "I think children nowadays are heavily immersed in their gadgets," Tatiana expressed her opinion. "And parents only encourage it. It's easy for them to brush off the child's questions and simply send them to the internet, let them delve into that. But what will they find there? It seems like a big landfill to me." Tatiana ended her statement with more emotion, accompanying her words with expressive gestures. "On the internet, there is both good and bad," the sage calmly commented. "But children often come across negativity there, fall under the influence of bad games, scammers, and start playing dangerous games where they are encouraged to go and jump off rooftops or do something else. Yes, they find all of this on the internet because no one takes care of them. No one nurtures their spirituality. Their parents say, 'We don't have time.' They believe that it's the educator's responsibility to teach them in school, but even they can't do it. There are no proper programs, and in school, children are often only turned into zombies instead of being developed. And then the question arises again, why did they even have a child if they don't have time, can't take care of them, and can't give them anything? Why did they bring them into this world? What for?" "To tick a box and be like everyone else," Matvey replied with bitter irony in his voice. "Yes, that's the main goal, to make me like everyone else, so that everything seems to be going fine in life." But that's precisely the biggest misconception. For a child to develop properly, they need to experience elevated emotions, to be immersed in a spiritual environment. And for that, their parents themselves must be spiritual. Only then can the child be given more and more freedom. As the students listened to the teacher, they became increasingly engrossed in his words and explanations, filtering them through their own experiences and emotions. When he finished explaining, the hand of another student, who had been attentively following the conversation, shot up. It was a fully gray-haired woman in her 60s, who still retained grace and attractiveness at her age. "Keeper," she began, respectfully looking at the sage, "tell me, what should we do if a child says, 'I don't want anything'? How should we handle this situation? Force them to do something against their will? But it's clear that this isn't a solution either. Vera, the child doesn't want anything because they have already been corrupted, and then someone realized it," the sage replied. "But it's too late now. They have already formed in that way. Now they don't want anything. Therefore, we must not miss the opportunity to teach the child to work, to toil, to engage in something useful and meaningful. Then they will grow up normally, because they will be occupied with something. And if they are given a computer to entertain themselves, they will search for some nonsense, sit there and do nothing. Furthermore, parents constantly indulge them, and they become accustomed to overindulgence. And then they become lazy, unable to do anything with their hands because nobody asks anything of them. And when they are told, 'Develop yourself spiritually,' they no longer want to, because they have been turned into a lazy slob who only eats, sleeps, lies around, and plays on the computer. After that, they won't want anything, because the most detrimental thing has already been done. Their soul has been practically destroyed. Instead of having them clean up from a young age, wash dishes, help their mother and father, their elderly grandparents, find some additional work so they can work and do something. The child should learn from childhood to work and help others." And, having listened to the teacher's explanations, Vera nodded and raised her hand again. "Teacher, I remembered Nekrasov's poem, Peasant Children," she said. "May I read it? There's a very relevant moment in it, just like what you said." The sage kindly nodded to the student, gesturing to show his support for her initiative. The woman then began reciting. These lines were familiar to everyone since childhood, and many students smiled, recalling the poem. "Once, in the cold winter season, I emerged from the forest. The frost was strong. I see a horse slowly climbing up the hill, pulling a load of firewood, and walking proudly in calm order, A peasant leads the horse by the reins, in big boots, a sheepskin coat, in large mittens, and he himself is all frozen. "Hey, lad, just keep going. You look so fierce, I must say. Where do the firewood come from?" "From the forest, of course. My father chops, and I take it away." Axe of a woodcutter resounded in the forest. "And does your father have a big family?" "Well, it's a big family, but only two people, my father and me, all the men we are." "Ah, I see. What's your name?"
"Vlas."
"And how old are you?"
"Just turned 6.
"Well, dead," the little boy shouted with a deep voice, yanking the reins and briskly walking away. The teacher spoke up after Vera finished reciting the poem from memory. "A very good example indeed. Notice how a child reasons at the age of 6. He already sees himself as a man who should help his father, mother, and provide for a large family. He already works, not idling on the stove. That's the kind of upbringing we need. In the past, one man could support 11 children and elderly parents who had no pensions. Families used to be very large, 10 or more children, and the wife didn't work. She took care of the household. The man provided for everyone. He was considered normal. And why? Because from the age of 6, he already helped his father, his family, and worked. But times have changed now, Angelina interjected, shaking her mane of red hair. We don't need to chop firewood, work so much in the fields, or tend to the stove. Life has become easier. Yes, it's easier, but it turns out that nowadays they turn a child into a parasite. Sit, lie down, we'll feed you, don't move, don't run. Here's a computer, play with it. That's how egotists and parasites are raised, who spend their whole lives depending on their mother and demanding that she provide for them. And when she tells them later, engage in spirituality, start a business, or do something, they no longer want anything. They no longer need anything. And that is the most frightening thing, the teacher explained, raising his hands as if calling upon each of the students to bear witness to his words. Well, if that's the case, is it already too late if a person has grown up like that? Irina asked. There's always a possibility to change something if a person wants to and begins working on themselves, the sage philosophically replied. But in practice, it's very difficult to awaken the soul of such individuals, and they themselves don't want anything. That's why we must think in advance about what we instill in our children. We need our children to help their mothers, fathers, grandparents, and people around them from a young age. We need to raise them in a way that they strive to do something greater, provide assistance to others within their means, learn to work rather than laze around on the couch. When the sage finished speaking, Tatiana raised her hand again. Dear Keeper, I have a question, she began. Many female students in our group who do not have partners really want to attract one and have children. Should we explain to them, using real-life examples, that it is a heavy burden and hard work and a great responsibility, and that it does not bring freedom? That this desire is not even their own? Yes, many people want to have children simply because it is socially accepted. They think to themselves, everyone else has children, so I should too. But is it really necessary for them? Replied the sage. That's the thing. Not many people think about it, Tatiana said. And I don't know if it's worth telling them or trying to dissuade them from dreaming about it. If a person is even slightly spiritually awakened, they need to be explained. They need to be aware of their actions and the responsibilities involved. Otherwise, they end up having children simply because it is the current norm. It's like the trend of owning cars. Nowadays, it is considered that everyone should have a car. But why does a person need it if there is public transportation? If someone lives in a place where public transportation doesn't reach, then it's understandable how they would need a car to get around. But in cities, there is public transportation, and even metro systems, allowing people to travel everywhere without traffic congestion. But no, I need a car because everyone else has one, and why should I be any different? Then the person buys some rundown car on credit, constantly repairs it, and it keeps breaking down. But they can at least check the box. I'm just like everyone else, I have a car. The same goes for family and having children.
It's obligatory to have them just to check the box. But why? If they genuinely meet a worthy man, then it's a different story, and they can consider getting married. If a field of love is created within the family, a spiritual environment, the most elevated states, then they can attract a light soul. But otherwise, what is the purpose? Concluded the sage. But it's so hard to explain when a person doesn't even come close to understanding, doesn't want to contemplate where their desires come from, Tatiana said. Teacher, can we say that envy guides his actions? Yes, we can, the sage replied. It turns out that people envy each other and keep looking. If someone has something, then I need it too. But it's a painful state. People need to be explained that it makes no sense to envy, to do everything for appearances, to follow some trend. Instead, it's better to engage in laughter meditation, dance, tune into something sublime, and enter a good state. Teacher, can we explain this to the women in the group, that in the end, all of this will lead to suffering? Tatiana asked. For example, if they choose an unworthy man, if they have a child just for appearances, it will eventually result in the child suffering, being morally disfigured. Will it not seem like I'm programming them for that? Tatiana, you can and should tell them like that, the sage confidently replied. Society has already programmed them for that, so we need to awaken people if they haven't lost the ability to understand. Unfortunately, girls are not taught how to choose the right man, and the program that they should marry the one who confesses love first is ingrained since childhood. That's why some drunkard or hustler approaches them, and the girl already thinks, oh, finally, what happiness. I now have a man like everyone else. Then a child is born thoughtlessly, unconsciously. And the child also grows up to be a drunkard like the father, constantly witnessing scandals and negativity. But the program is fulfilled. I have a husband like everyone else, and I have children. That's how they live and do everything just for appearances. They need to be explained not to do it that way.
After hearing the teacher's response, Tatiana looked at him gratefully. Her eyes now sparkled with understanding, and it was evident that the disciple was ready to convey the realized truths further, to share them in her group in her city. Meanwhile, Irina raised her hand. Teacher, here's a question, she began. If a person, for example, is poor and has no money, and they live in such a way that they most likely never will, does it mean they shouldn't have a child? Or, for instance, if a woman can't find a decent man for herself? What should she do? Live alone her whole life? How should one think in such cases? Victoria's sincere question was met with universal interest, and all the students froze, holding their breath, waiting for the sage's answer. He looked at the gathering with a glance that flickered with shining sparks. Well, if there's no money for a decent good car, a person buys some old wreck, and it immediately starts falling apart. Something comes loose, something else breaks, and they keep going through the trouble, fixing it. What do you think? Is it necessary for them? He looked at the student questioningly, inviting her to draw an analogy. Are you suggesting that the same goes for a partner who is an alcoholic, and for a child born just for appearances? The sage smiled and nodded, confirming the girl's suspicion. If you're going to buy something, buy a good car. If you're going to get married, marry a person of all measures and virtues. If you're going to raise a child, do it in a spiritually elevated atmosphere. Then it's possible. But to settle for just anyone, to have a child for the sake of appearances, and then suffer and struggle for the rest of your life, that's not something you should do. It's better to develop, elevate yourself to a higher level, attract a worthy person. Then you can think about a child when you have something to offer, when they can grow up in a loving and nurturing family. Having finished the explanation, the keeper once again scanned the students with his gaze, awaiting new questions. Angelina's hand shot up. It was clear that she had been eagerly waiting for an opportunity to learn something important. Great sage, what kind of good deeds go into God's credit book? She asked. And then, slightly hesitating, added, not all good deeds will be credited, right?
Yes, Angelina, not all, the teacher confirmed. God looks at a person's emotions when they perform those deeds. For example, if a person gets scared because they were told that it's difficult for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God, and they think, God is going to do something to me, punish me, and in order to avoid that, they decide to go and give alms. So you can't do good deeds out of fear? The girl clarified. Good deeds should be done from an elevated state, from love for others, but here the person simply gets scared, thinking that they will be sent to hell, and God looks at it. They seem to be doing a good deed, but they do it out of fear, which means they are an imperfect person who doesn't understand anything, doing it in the wrong state. And does God then punish them for it? Angelina asked, trying to grasp the essence. The sage shook his head in denial. No, God doesn't punish anyone. That's not his goal. But if God sees that a person is doing good deeds without compassion, without elevated emotions, without love, but simply out of fear for appearances, or because they fear judgment from others, it means their soul still has many lessons to learn. That's why God looks at our emotions, our motives. First and foremost, we should do good from the heart, from the soul, with an elevated state. And even if someone just thinks about doing a good deed with love, with some elevated mood, even if they only think about it, decide to do it, plan it, it is already credited to them, because God sees it. Ah, they're starting to improve, starting to understand why they are in this life. Even if they haven't done it yet, just the intention counts towards their credit. The next question came from a slender young woman with sharp shoulders, a short haircut, and high cheekbones. Dear Master, tell me, how can I find the key to myself and turn efforts into joy? She paused, carefully choosing her words to express her thoughts. Do you understand? So that the desire to perform them arises, rather than doing them reluctantly, going against a woman's nature? The teacher pondered for a moment, contemplating the answer. Alexandra, people often have a misconceived notion of what effort is and what it brings, he said, looking penetratingly at his student, and began to explain. For example, how does feminine nature manifest? Is a person always dressed well, adorned, and made up? Does femininity always shine through? Does a woman behave as she could behave, like Cleopatra, for instance? If she doesn't feel like dressing up and putting on makeup every time, or if she says, I don't know how, it means she's lazy to make the effort to vividly express her femininity. But what should one do in such a case? Alexandra asked again. If, for example, a person derives no pleasure from it, they want to experience joy from the process itself, but it's not there. The first thing to do is to simply realize one's laziness. We were raised like this because we were put to bed during quiet time, not allowed to run around, and were fed. In school, we had to sit still at our desks for hours, for years. That's why such inertia has developed. That's why it's very difficult for a person to do anything, even in feminine pursuits. We become accustomed to passivity. Teacher, but what should we do? Alexandra asked again, and her voice revealed a sincere desire to work on herself, overcome this inertia, and learn to derive joy from activity, from unfolding her feminine essence. How can we change this? The first thing to do is to realize that this passivity constantly hinders us, and it manifests in all areas. For example, if a person doesn't move much, what happens then? What's the result? The sage looked at the student questioningly. Health deteriorates, Alexandra answered without hesitation. And if feminine nature is weakly expressed? The teacher asked again. This time the woman pondered. Well, perhaps they can't attract a decent man. The sage nodded and asked another question. And if a person doesn't learn anything, doesn't work, but only lies on the couch, then they don't earn money? Correct. No matter which situation we consider, a person always loses due to passivity. They lose their health. They can't grow and develop. They can't create a family with a worthy person, and they live in poverty. If a person is passive, They deprive themselves of everything that life has to offer. Their entire life passes by while they only sleep, eat, and watch television. In doing so, their soul gains no experience. Understanding arose in Alexandra's eyes, and she even froze in place as a thought came to her mind. Keeper, could this be an expression of a desire for death? She asked unexpectedly. In essence, if the soul doesn't gain experience, then the person isn't fulfilling God's task and only wants to return to the subtle level? Essentially, that's correct, the sage confirmed her guess. Tamas, passivity, and laziness lead us only towards death. That's what we need to realize, to look at ourselves from the outside and say, what am I doing? I'm not living properly. This is not life, but some kind of half-existence, barely moving. I barely breathe, barely move, like some sick old man. The keeper spoke without malice, without aggression, and his words carried empathy and gentle irony as he depicted the thoughts of a person suddenly realizing their total laziness and wasted life. A normal life, he continued, is when a person is vibrant, active, doing many good, kind, light, and interesting things. That's when life becomes bright and rewarding. But if a person passively lies on the couch, what will life give them? The master met eyes with the disciple again and paused, allowing her to formulate the answer herself. Nothing, she exclaimed with a sad smirk. They bury him in the grave, and there he'll rest and lie. Despite the somber verdict, it was said with such piercing irony that a wave of smiles rippled among the disciples. The sage smiled too, and his sparkling, warm gaze touched Alexandra. Therefore, if we realize that laziness hinders us from living, from getting something out of life, then we must also realize that we must overcome this laziness, he continued. We must make constant efforts to overcome it, to do as much joyful, light, active, positive, and constructive things as possible. That's when life will turn towards us. Then we will achieve much, do much, experience much. Teacher, am I understanding correctly that effort is the key here? Alexandra asked again. So we have to overcome ourselves each time. Exactly, the sage made an approving gesture. It is through effort that our life becomes vibrant and interesting. Otherwise, a person will just lie on the couch and indulge in their laziness, and life will pass them by. If something needs to be done, laziness prevents them from doing it. They are afraid to make an effort. And so, a person remains lying on the couch with their laziness, achieving nothing. Alexandra looked at the master with sincere gratitude. Thank you for such detailed explanations, she said, her voice trembling. It was evident that the sage's words touched something deep within her soul, reaching an old wound, something she had even hidden from herself. And now, having understood herself fully, she was ready to move forward, ready to make efforts, to manifest and live a fulfilling life. The keeper of knowledge sent the disciple a wave of supportive and accepting energy, and immediately, Alexandra's face began to radiate an inner glow. The sage smiled and turned his gaze to Tatiana, who had been raising her hand for a few minutes, intending to ask a new question. Master, please advise, she spoke with a slight unease, evident in her voice, which indicated the deeply personal nature of her question. How can I help my 12-year-old child avoid repeating my mistakes? I have a daughter, and I'm very afraid that she will develop a wrong attitude towards men, towards life in general. Tatiana paused, as if hesitating whether to continue or not, but upon encountering the kind gaze of the teacher, she continued, You see, it so happened that I married an unworthy man, the first one who proposed, but back then, I believed that he loved me, and he turned out to be a tyrant and an alcoholic. I endured his abuse for a long time until I became wiser and found the strength to kick him out. And now I don't know how to ensure that my daughter doesn't adopt these patterns. It's very simple. The sage looked at Tatiana with understanding, acceptance, and support. You have to mock all those old beliefs, laugh at them, exaggerate them at every convenient opportunity. Gradually, she will come to realize that it's all nonsense, it's all rubbish, that it was all wrong. That's the example you need to set to show a new attitude towards life. Do you think it will work? Tatiana asked, no longer hiding her anxiety. Will she understand? At 12 years old, a person is already forming and can gradually absorb this information. You need to laugh at it more often, exaggerate it, and say that it's all nonsense, the sage explained. And should I explain it to her? Tatiana asked again. For example, tell her about the program society instills in us? Yes, that's necessary too, the keeper replied. Tell her how girls are influenced from an early age by the program that says, whoever comes first and confesses their love will be a prince. Hold on to that person. It doesn't matter if he's a drunkard. Fairy tales, cartoons, TV shows, they all instill these ideas. Irina suddenly raised her hand and said emotionally, oh, I just remembered that there are pickup artists nowadays. They are taught these three magical words to say, I love you. They also teach these mama's boys how to manipulate a woman into having sex, what to say to make her melt on the first day of acquaintance, and go to bed with them. Irina's words caused a buzz and a few indignant remarks among the disciples. And that's why we need to mock all of this, the sage reminded them, for ourselves and for our children. We need to talk about the existence of such programs, that they are simply conditioning that influences us. We need to understand this and not follow such conditioning. If your daughter constantly sees this example, how we laugh, how we discuss these things, then she will come to realize it too. But I'm afraid she's still young and won't understand, Tatiana confessed, lowering her gaze guiltily. I don't even tell her about what we do during our sessions. Is that wrong? Tatiana, you need to talk. Gradually share little by little. Start with humor, with exaggeration, the teacher gently explained. If we remain silent and don't tell them anything, how will the child learn? How will you pass on the wisdom you have gained? They will continue living with the old conditioning they were previously exposed to, or that they see on television, absorb from the internet, or learn from friends. That's what they will live by. That's why we must show them our example. If our example is vivid and active, then something will begin to change within the child. The programs will slowly start to crumble, and perhaps they too will awaken and become different people. Thank you, Tatiana said, deeply moved. I will do my best to ensure that my daughter doesn't repeat my mistakes. An atmosphere of universal support settled among the disciples. Those present looked at Tatiana with warmth, encouraging her with their gaze, and a few kind words were spoken. But the conversation continued. Irina spoke again. Dear keeper, during the seminars, I have a strong desire to become a mentor, she began. But when I return to society, when I switch back to work and everyday life, that desire somehow fades or takes a back seat. Tell me, how can I truly understand myself? How can I make the right efforts on the spiritual path? Irina, a person consists of many parts, the sage began explaining willingly. There is also a spiritual part. Let's say a person attends a seminar and their spiritual part begins to develop. Finally, it receives nourishment for itself, impressions. The person returns home and another part kicks in, the part that argues with their husband, carries the burden of the entire family, and works from morning till night. When these parts activate, the spiritual component, at that moment, loses its impressions. And when it doesn't receive impressions, it begins to weaken. So, after the seminar, the spiritual part weakens, while the other parts, on the contrary, grow stronger. They feed on negative impressions and become stronger. Negativity surrounds us, workplace scandals, worries about the new workday, overtime hours. And then there's always a dissatisfied boss, clients arguing. What if a person is working two or three jobs as well? Teacher, but what should one do in such a case? How can one resist this influence? One must constantly nourish the soul with elevated impressions, the keeper of knowledge explained calmly and confidently. Take a music player with headphones and listen to our transcendental music, divine chants, audiobooks. Instead of dealing with an alcoholic husband, absorbing conflicts and all the negativity at work and in the family, why be in these negative states? Instead of immersing oneself completely in routine, it's better to receive elevated impressions. A person must decide for themselves to dwell only in the lightest, good, and joyful states. If they are in these states, then everything is good for them. And how can one understand their path? Irina asked again, raising her deep blue eyes to the sage. Is it given to me to become a mentor? Will I be able to? The most important thing is to be in an elevated state, and from there, see where you are drawn towards. Essentially, it doesn't matter how you express yourself through kind deeds, whether you become a mentor, help the group more, or start assisting grandmothers, for example. What matters is being in this spiritual state, constantly receiving a lot of spiritual nourishment so that the soul begins to grow. If the soul grows, the spiritual part will grow and strengthen, and then it will naturally be resolved who you are meant to be. It will come on its own. Master, tell me, suddenly spoke Vera, a gray-haired disciple, after catching the teacher's gaze. Do I understand correctly that if we immerse ourselves in a blissful state, then spiritual impressions become the most important, while scandals, disputes, and the boss's shouting become unimportant to us? Exactly, nodded the master with a gentle smile. And why worry about them? I have divine chance playing here. I am in the grace of God. I rejoice in life. That has become the most important thing for us. Then we are immediately in a happy state, not getting involved in disputes or fights. We abide in a blissful state and our soul grows. That is the most important. Therefore, the most crucial thing is to think about how to receive more spiritual impressions, how to enter the most elevated, joyful, and fulfilling state. Dear teacher, asked Victoria, who had been attentively following the conversation, how can one correctly manifest elevated emotions in society? Well, so that others perceive you adequately, without unnecessary questions or suspicions. The sage mischievously looked at the young woman. It's very simple. If you are joyful, just say, "My lover promised to buy me a fur coat." The girl couldn't help but laugh, and others joined in, catching the sparkling wave of merriment. And if we enter an elevated state and tears appear, compassion, repentance, then we say, "Oh, Mom fell ill," the sage continued to explain in a more serious tone. People need a clear explanation so that they can understand and continue to freely express their emotions. If you mention a lover, everyone will understand. The same goes for Mom. And then there won't be any more questions about why we're rejoicing or crying. Such an explanation is normal and acceptable for them. They might even start to envy us, thinking, "Wow, she's happy. She has a wealthy lover. I should do something for myself too." The main thing is to label everything correctly, and then everyone will understand that we're just like everyone else, that we live under the influence of the same beliefs, think in the same patterns, and therefore everything is fine with us. But if they see something unfamiliar like, "Oh, she doesn't live by the same values as we do," we must attack her, guide her onto the right path so that she walks towards the abyss with us. Dear Master, Victoria spoke again, deciding to ask another question that interested her. Why do I believe strongly in something, while in other cases I don't? What does it depend on? Where does this disbelief come from within us? The girl spoke with great sincerity, trying to describe her feelings and emotions as accurately as possible. I seem to want to believe in everything you say, but often I feel like something inside is hindering me. These are the implanted programs within us, the keeper responded definitively. Let's say I tell you that children should only be born in a spiritual environment, and immediately you start thinking, "Well, but how am I going to create that environment?" A barrier, an obstacle arises, and you slide into disbelief, because to believe you have to accept it, you have to follow it. And now you're thinking, "When will this spiritual environment come? Maybe we should just have children as we are." It turns out that we are experiencing a collision with some program that is embedded in a human, Victoria reiterated, trying to better remember and understand the meaning conveyed by the teacher. To believe means to do something good, something light, to transform one's life in some way, right? Yes, you understood correctly. But it seems to be something complex. It's difficult to change what is familiar. It's hard to make an effort and start moving towards the light. It is at that moment that disbelief arises, because we always encounter programs, influences, thoughts, laziness, and negative emotions, responded the teacher. Matvey raised his hand, requesting permission to speak. Teacher, he began, let's say you said, don't get offended. But let's say I think, how can I not get offended when emotions overwhelm me? When someone treats me unfairly, doesn't understand me? How can I rejoice in that? And that's when disbelief arises, right? I doubt it, which means I already consider it all wrong. Yes, Matvey, that is also a very illustrative example, spoke the sage. And does it work the other way around? The student clarified. For example, if I have already thought about something similar, and then you mention it, and then those words resonate with my thoughts, and I say, I believe, because I'm already inclined towards certain things. That's right. For instance, there's Shavasana, a yoga pose in which a person lies down and deeply relaxes. And you have already practiced it somewhere, and it seemed very easy and pleasant to you. So when you remember it, and my words align with what you already have, you say, oh, I believe. But if the words don't align, if implementing them seems difficult and challenging, if it requires self-change, then it's much easier for a person to say, oh, then I don't believe. The sage once again surveyed the students with a perceptive gaze, trying to understand the extent of their comprehension. They all looked at him with wide-open eyes, striving to listen and absorb every fragment of truth. Then he continued, in a person there should arise not belief and disbelief, but deep understanding, clarity. They should understand the reasons behind their emotions, thoughts, and processes that occur within them. For example, why do I want to lie down in Shavasana? Because I truly feel like being lazy. But doing something difficult is not something I feel like doing. So I resist. Laziness within me. Certain programs. Negative emotions resist. That's why I don't want to do it all. If a person genuinely sees all of this within themselves, if they understand all their internal processes, how everything unfolds, then they no longer have belief or disbelief, but understanding. This is who I am. This is what I consist of. They see themselves realistically and already work on themselves. Dear Keeper, how can we understand that someone has truly become a spiritual student and is not just imagining it? Angelina asked with a clear voice. If they have become a spiritual student, it means they are trying to change themselves, the master explained. But those who come here just for show usually say things like, I have been in the school for 10 years. Why hasn't anything happened? And when they are asked, did you do everything you were told? Zrinya, it turns out they didn't, that they either did very little or only did what they liked. But when it seemed difficult to them, they didn't do it. But I don't understand, the girl exclaimed sincerely. If you don't want to do anything, don't want to work on yourself, why even engage in spiritual development? The keeper slightly spread his arms, acknowledging that Angelina was simply expressing her emotions, and this question did not require his answer. For various reasons, he replied with a touch of mystery. But the essence is not in that. It's about people who come for show and then wonder why nothing is happening to them. You can attend classes for 10 years, but if you don't work on yourself, if you don't apply the knowledge in your life, there will be no changes. A true student is someone who has received the knowledge and thinks, oh, that's great. Now I will start practicing this. I will start doing it now. Then they immediately begin to change, and they start experiencing spiritual growth. A deep understanding lit up in the eyes of many students. The teacher could see that they were internalizing his words, that they were contemplating right now how much they themselves truly were genuine spiritual students. He paused for a moment, giving everyone time to reflect. The sun disk was almost descending below the horizon, and the profound spiritual conversation was coming to an end. However, the teacher wanted to allow for one more question. His gaze met Vera's, and the middle-aged woman with silver hair began to speak. "Dear Keeper, can a soul refuse to incarnate on Earth, or does it have no choice, and God will send it to develop anyway?" "It's like refusing death," the sage replied, and a transparent smile touched the corners of his lips. "Even if a person decides to refuse death, they will still die. Similarly, we cannot refuse incarnation, because it is God's decision. If a person has not yet become an angel, they must incarnate." "But teacher, tell us, how does it happen?" the woman asked again. "How does God understand that now is the time? How does it manifest?" "Because the subtle bodies of a person disintegrate. Their physical body disintegrates on Earth, and then, after some time, the subtle bodies also disintegrate, and that's when the person needs to incarnate. The mental and astral bodies break down. How will they live on a subtle level? They can no longer stay there. That's why incarnation occurs." "And what if a person has strong astral and mental bodies? Then they can live at a subtle level for a longer time. And when their causal body develops, they no longer need to incarnate. But as long as their bodies are underdeveloped, as long as they disintegrate, they are compelled to die. So it means that even on a subtle level, a person dies?" Vera exclaimed. "Yes," nodded the sage. "In the subtle level, a person also dies, and immediately after that, they incarnate in the physical level. We cannot avoid this process until we have developed our soul. If we spiritually evolve, then at one point, we will cease to incarnate. We will become angels. That's why we must strive to understand God's lessons quickly, go through them all, and no longer incarnate, to become angels and begin to help all souls and people from a subtle level." A tranquil silence settled upon the clearing around the teacher. The unveiled truth appeared simple and transparent to the students, like a drop of morning dew. It carried harmony and beauty, comparable to the majestic beauty of the surrounding nature, another wondrous creation of God. In that moment, everyone immersed themselves in an extraordinary state of closeness to Him. It was as if they could feel His breath in every breeze, in the rustle of each blade of grass, in the enchanting scents of meadow flowers. At that moment, there was no desire to ask anything further or engage in discussions. They only wished to absorb the beauty and revel in the proximity of truth. The sage looked upon the disciples with a loving gaze and began to recite the lines of a spiritual poem. "Above the vast universe, I soar, I, who lives forever and once, long to merge with the immense world, with the sense of all and every breath. Having embraced the beauty of all galaxies, I, who lives in everything and everyone, contemplate my own emptiness in the twist of spatial illusion, sparkling amid myriads of stars. I, who lives instantly and eternally, will cast a glowing bridge, dissolving myself in the infinite."
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.